Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is urgent work, and it must begin now. So we'll use every one of the next 203 days to get as much work as possible underway and to lock in commitments wherever we can.
We begin today with more information about Mayor Bloomberg's plan to defend the shore from climate change. Economic Development Corporation Chief Seth Pinsky is the mayor's point person on this super ambitious five-borough plan, and he is here in our studio this morning. Seth, thank you for coming in for this, and welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you.
And listeners, you've been hearing this on the news. You can now react and ask questions at 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, even as we hear some more of the details, or post your comment or question to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehr Show. And right off the bat, Seth, the mayor made a point early in the speech, and we played it before the news, of using the term climate change to characterize the underlying cause of Sandy, something not every politician is willing to do at this point. Governor Christie recently refused to when asked by one of our reporters. Did the mayor squarely want to take a stand on that as part of this?
Well, since 2007 and the issuance of the mayor's landmark Plan YC, which was a 30-year sustainability plan for New York City, the mayor has talked about the importance of addressing climate change as an issue, not just the effects of climate change, but also the causes. And for example, one of the ambitions of that plan was to reduce the carbon footprint of New York City by 30%, and we're already over halfway to that goal. So climate change has been an issue that the mayor has been focused on for some time. I think, though, it's important to understand that even for those who don't want to acknowledge the human cause of the changes in the climate, you can't deny the fact that something is, in fact, changing in the climate. And just one example is the fact that in New York City, since 1900, sea levels have already risen by a foot. This isn't something that we're talking about prospectively. It's something that has actually already happened.
And so all these proposals are not just based on what if another storm hits, but an assumption based on the science, and there was a major report that came out just earlier this week, as you know, that our temperatures are going up, our rainfalls are getting heavier, our floodplains are moving inland, it's already happened, and there is a curve that you can more or less project over the next 50 years.
Yeah, and that's another thing that I think is very important that came out of Plan YC was creating the New York City Panel on Climate Change, which issued the report to which you referred, and looked not just at storms. Storms clearly are something that we need to be very concerned about, and the impacts of Sandy were unquestionable, but it's a whole host of climate change impacts that we need to address as a city.
And this is going to be one of Michael Bloomberg's biggest legacies, his entire commitment to sustainability, Plan YC dating back to 2007. Amazing to think that that's 6 years ago now that that came out, and the political world in Washington is still debating whether to see this as real. And right alongside public health and education and rezoning, remember the mayor came off the fence when he was going to stay neutral in the presidential race last fall. And at the last minute, after Sandy, he endorsed President Obama because of climate change. So there, folks, is part of Michael Bloomberg's central legacy. So the Times begins its article today describing this as a plan of flood walls, levees, and bulkheads. What's the difference between a flood wall, a levee, and a bulkhead?
Well, different types of coastal defenses deal with different types of challenges. So in some cases, what you're talking about is trying to elevate the surface along the waterfront. That's a bulkhead. This is a piece of structure that's put in place to hold the land in place, but also keeps the water out. Levees and seawalls are structures that are put along the coast that are specifically designed to be elevated above the ground level to keep water out. And then there are a whole host of other defenses. The one thing, though, that I think is important to point out is that as critical as our coastal defenses are, and that's a major part of the plan that the mayor proposed yesterday, there's also a whole host of other areas that we need to address as a city. And in fact, the plan that the mayor released has 15 different chapters looking at a range of critical systems and infrastructure that start at our coastline, but also look inland at our buildings, at our utilities, at our telecommunication system, and the list goes on.
Let's do a five-borough tour. And again, listeners, we'll take your calls from all five boroughs if you want to ask about particular provisions for your area, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692, or anything else you want to say or ask of the mayor's economic development chief, Seth Pinsky, 212-433-9692, or post to WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehr Show. But I want to begin the five-borough tour with this idea of a seaport city near the South Street Seaport. The seaport got hammered by Sandy. And what the mayor talked about in the speech yesterday was to build something on the Lower East Side that is like Battery Park City on the Lower West Side, which stood up pretty well. What made the difference for the seaport, which we think of as, you know, it's not that much older than Battery Park City. Maybe they were built around the same time. So what was really the difference?
Well, before answering that, and I do want to answer that question, I think it's important to understand that in every way in this plan, there are short and medium-term plans, and there are long-term plans. And also, the mayor outlined yesterday a system of integrated flood protection that would go up and down the Manhattan coast, with the first phase being on the Lower East Side in Chinatown because of the vulnerability of those communities, that wouldn't wait for a long-term project like Seaport City. But coming to the question of Seaport City, what a lot of people have observed about the flooding in Lower Manhattan is that if you trace the area that flooded and look at the area in Lower Manhattan that didn't flood, what you see is almost exactly the original coastline of Manhattan. And the lesson that people have took from that is that somehow landfill is automatically susceptible to flooding. But another observation that's important to make is that actually, if you look at what happened, that's true except for Battery Park City. And the reason Battery Park City didn't flood was because when it was built, based on the best information that was then available, it was actually elevated. And that's really the important lesson to take from this. Landfill, building along the coast, those aren't inherently dangerous. They're only dangerous if you do it wrong.
It's so interesting to me, though, and it's kind of counterintuitive, and I think it runs counter to a lot of the conversation we've been having in the public square about this, because many people have been assuming we would need to build away from the shore, not further into the water, to be safe from storm surges. And, of course, Battery Park City is landfill. The Hudson River used to be there, or the beginning of the harbor, depending on which part you're at. So this makes sense?
We think it does, and it's certainly something that we think merits very close study. And there's no reason to believe that you couldn't build something of roughly the scale of a Battery Park City. And the advantage that it would have would be not only that it could be elevated and could block floodwaters from entering the neighborhoods that were so devastated during Sandy on the lower east side of Lower Manhattan, but in addition to that, it could provide land for development. There's a significant need for housing. There's a need for new modern office space and parkland. All of that could be built on this land. And potentially, it could be the sort of thing that not only maybe could be self-financing, but could even provide surplus funding to allow us to do other resiliency measures.
The economic development chief talking about economic development, there certainly would be a lot of private interest in developing there. Susan in Brooklyn has a question about this, I think. Susan, you're on WNYC. Hi.
Yes, I was he kind of addressed it, but I'm still a little confused about it because I remember seeing an article on PBS, as a matter of fact, where they said that Lower Manhattan now is wider than it was, which automatically would make the sea level go up because you have less space.
Less area for the actual water in what is already on the east side a very narrow East River, which isn't really a river.
Well, we've done a significant amount of hydrodynamic modeling, looking at all of the coastal defenses that we're proposing. And given the area of water that you're talking about displacing relative to the total area of the harbor and the river, and then in the southern parts of the city, the ocean, it doesn't have a material impact on water levels, the things that we're describing. There are, though, things that you can do that could, in fact, have that impact. And one of the things that a lot of people were proposing initially were harbor-wide floodgates. And there you really do face the challenge, especially if you're looking up, say, at the mouth of the East River, which is a very narrow area, where if you were to put a flood wall there and a surge of the size of Sandy's were to come in, the water would have to go somewhere. And you're talking about such a narrow area, you would probably end up flooding very large areas of northern Long Island and the northern Bronx.
So it really depends on where in the city you're talking about. But as a general principle, here's another 9 seconds of what the mayor said yesterday.
As New Yorkers, we cannot and we will not abandon our waterfront. It is one of our greatest assets. We must protect it, not retreat from it.
So does this mean that you and the mayor rejected the template of retreat from the shore that many environmentalists and some designers advocate that would involve allowing much of the shore to return to marshes and wetlands, the sort of gradual natural state of ocean becoming land, rather than water up until some man-made building?
I think the answer to that is yes and no. First of all, we do believe that there's a place for the natural shoreline. The administration has been very active in restoring wetlands and restoring shorefront parks, which provided protection to the neighborhoods behind them in many places. We've been in the process of nourishing beaches since Hurricane Sandy because we think that that's a very important part of protecting the coastline of the city. That being said, though, to say that we're going to retreat entirely from the coastline or largely from the coastline is just not realistic. As the mayor said, it's also not desirable. But I think it's very important to point out how unrealistic it is. As of today, according to the latest flood maps from FEMA, the 100-year floodplain contains over 500 million square feet of built area. That's more built area than the entire city of Minneapolis. And the idea that somehow we're going to move that is just not something that's practical.
So the only alternative is to build higher up?
The alternative is actually a series of protections. And that really is the philosophy behind this report. It's multi-layered defenses. You start with the coastline. You then think about buildings. And in some cases, that may mean elevation. In some cases, that may mean just protection of critical systems so that if flooding occurs, the elevator doesn't go out, electricity doesn't go out. And then you also have to think about all the systems that support those buildings and protect those too.
Ophelia in the Rockaways. You're on WNYC. Hello, Ophelia.
Hello. I'm curious about your take on the proposal for the construction of a redundant dune along the Rockaway Peninsula.
And that was in there?
Yes, that's something that we are very supportive of. As you probably know, the Army Corps of Engineers working with the Department of Parks and Recreation is in the process right now of restoring about 3.5 million cubic yards of sand that was lost. And as part of that, temporary dunes are being put in place. In the mayor's plan, there's a proposal to put much more robust dunes along the Rockaway Peninsula, starting in one of the most vulnerable areas, which is Breezy Point, where, in fact, the mayor is proposing what's known as a double dune system so that there are two lines of defense for the community.
Do you like that, Ophelia? Is that what it sounds to you like the Rockaways need?
Absolutely. A double dune system across the entire peninsula because it is a barrier peninsula. And that system would not only protect Rockaway, but really all of the New York City waterfront along the Atlantic coast.
Ophelia, thank you so much. And in fact, Jamaica Bay, which would help protect Staten Island, is also in this plan.
Yeah, and I think that it's very important to understand that during Hurricane Sandy, a lot of the flooding didn't only come from the ocean. I think a lot of people assume that it's the ocean-facing parts of the city that were the areas that were the source of the water that inundated much of the rest of the five boroughs. That was part of the story. And in many ways, the most destructive forces were along the ocean where it wasn't just water but waves that came ashore. But there was also a significant amount of what the mayor described yesterday as backdoor flooding. And that's where water came in through inlets and canals.
Newtown Creek, Coney Island
and
Creek.
And Jamaica Bay being a great example of that. And one of the things that, again, we believe deserves very close study, and that probably is a more complicated and therefore longer-term project, is looking at the potential for some sort of surge barrier at the entrance to Jamaica Bay at Rockaway Inlet. And that could protect all of the neighborhoods along the bayfront, including the backside of the Rockaway Peninsula.
Let's take a call from the Bronx. Inga on City Island. You're on WNYC. Hi, Inga.
Hi, good morning. Thank you. City Island had a lot of destruction in Sandy, but still was very lucky that the high tide did not exactly come at the same time as the storm as initially projected. Is there anything in the plan that affects City Island?
There is, and that's, I think, a very important point. A lot of people believe that Sandy was the worst that nature will ever throw at us. And in fact, in some ways, hopefully it was. But in other ways, it likely isn't. For example, the surge came, as you pointed out, at high tide in the southern part of the city, in the harbor and on the ocean front, but actually at low tide in Long Island Sound. If the opposite had occurred, the devastation likely would have been much greater in areas like northern Queens and the Bronx, where you live. And that's a very important fact. Also, it's important to remember that Hurricane Sandy, although it had a record-shattering storm surge, had relatively low winds and had relatively little rain. If the opposite had been true, it would have again impacted very different parts of the city. And the mayor's plan looks not just at the areas that happened to be devastated by Sandy, although we do focus intensely on those, but also looks at all of the parts of the city that are vulnerable, including City Island.
And on Staten Island, it looks like you plan levees on the east shore and revetments, as they're called, on the south shore and portable barriers to the north. Is that the so-called removable storm barriers that were in the headlines leading up to the speech?
Well, those are actually three different strategies. So the issue on the east shore is that you have communities that actually are below sea level inland. And so what happens is that when the waters come in, and not just from hurricanes, but even from regular nor'easters, it actually gets trapped behind. And that's one of the reasons why you had the devastation that you did in Staten Island. The Army Corps of Engineers has been doing a study for a number of years, and we think it's time for them to finish the study and actually start working on this project. There's money in the supplemental appropriation from Congress to do this, to build an armored levee along the east shore of Staten Island. On the south shore, you have cliffs that were actually eroded by the storm. We think it's important to shore those up. Then what you're referring to is yet a third strategy, which is a series of permanent and removable defenses that will keep water from coming in. They include elevating the shoreline, things like planters, and then in gaps, you can actually put posts and slats in that can be removed so that the water side is actually accessible by people at times when flooding isn't occurring.
A critique, I think, from Danny in Rockaway Park. Hi, Danny, you're on the air.
Yes, hi. I'm actually calling you back. You had a great show the other day with a Fox Commissioner, Veronica White. What I'd like to say is you had asked me to come back, and just this Monday they started doing some type of protection on the beach, but the community here, most of us feel it's not sufficient. They're putting up trap bags that are 4 feet high, that there's sections of it still open. They're not going from Beach 126. We would like protection along the whole beach coast, not just parts of it, sections of it. They said we were going to get HESCO barriers, but we're waiting for some kind of DEC approval. You know, on the HESCO barriers, we need more protection. It's got to be higher than it is. It's only 4 feet high.
Danny, thank you. What about his concern?
And the answer to that is that during the storm, the Rockaways lost, as I mentioned, 3.5 million cubic yards of sand. This is going to be something that unfortunately is going to take some time to put into place. And in the meantime, what the Parks Department is doing appropriately is putting in temporary measures to make sure that the most vulnerable areas are protected. But over time, and we hope that this is something that we can get started on as quickly as possible, it will involve more than just that. It will have to involve significant nourishment of the beaches. It will have to involve dunes, and it will have to involve other protections. And all of that is contained in the mayor's plan, and we're ready to work with the Army Corps on those projects.
We're almost out of time with the city's Economic Development Corporation Chief Seth Pinsky, dispatched by the mayor to talk about the new Future Sandys Protection Plan that the mayor unveiled yesterday, really 250 separate proposals in this ultra-ambitious report spanning inland and shore areas in all five boroughs, a huge vision for the future of New York City that future mayors will have to fulfill the commitment to, and we'll ask those mayoral candidates if they will as they continue to come on the show. But I want to take one more call for Seth on something that's not exactly in the plan, and that is going to be from Alan in Brooklyn. Hi, Alan.
Good morning, Brian. It seems that since Sandy happened, all the major civic organizations addressing the aftermath have focused on dealing with disaster recovery and not focusing on the cause. If we had spent an ounce of prevention on carbon dioxide, the 50-cent gas tax proposed by Perot 20 years ago seems so small now compared to the massive costs of the damage that have been done by climate change.
And so, Alan, I'm going to leave it there for time, but we're getting a number of people calling in or writing in with basically this question, which is they don't want the city just to adapt to climate change, which is what this all is. They want to hear that we're doing things to prevent climate change like a carbon tax.
And the good news is that we are. This is an administration that can walk and chew gum at the same time. And the mayor has for many years been a leader on both sides of the issue, both in ensuring that we're doing what we can to reduce our carbon footprint and to reduce the causes of climate change, but also understanding that we're just one city. And that the problem is bigger than just this city.
If they don't do it in Washington, if they don't do it in Beijing, then it's not going to matter what New York City does by itself, except as a drop in the ocean, right?
It does matter, but it means also that we have to plan for the possible effects, and that's what we're doing at the same time.
One other thing for you as economic development chief, the NYU sociologist Eric Kleinenberg was here last week, and he had two of his graduate students with him who had studied the city's response to Sandy, and they made the point that the things that will protect especially low-income residents of the city are the social ties that will help in any disaster, not just the kinds of barriers that we're talking about against physical storm surges, but, you know, economic development, better transit for Red Hook was one example. Are they making the same point, and is any of that in here?
All of it is in there, as a matter of fact. And it doesn't get as much attention because the pictures aren't as dramatic as things like coastal protection. But looking at community building as an important part of resiliency is a critical element of this. In fact, there's an entire chapter in the plan that's devoted to that. We're working on building community networks and in working with community-based organizations to help them to develop plans for future impacts of climate change. And economic development is also a critical part of our plan. As we like to say, the plans that we have for the communities that were devastated are not just about rebuilding, but rebuilding smarter, stronger, and better.
Well, Mayor Bloomberg deserves credit for something this big in his last few months of office. He's not just sleepwalking to the end. And as I said earlier, if this gets done, this is going to be as big a part of his legacy as education or zoning or public health, maybe more, because it's so much physical infrastructure if it gets built that people will see and interact with every day, just like people think of Robert Moses, you know, for better and sometimes for worse. But it's all there, all this physical infrastructure that he masterminded, and we'll see how much of this gets done. But Mayor Bloomberg going out of office determined to do it. And we thank Economic Development Corporation President Seth Pinsky, who led the mayor's special initiative for rebuilding and resiliency. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer and WNYC. Coming up next, New York State Attorney General Eric Schneiderman proposes a way to avoid future IRS scandals. More scrutiny of tax-exempt groups. Stay with us.